Hi, folks. My name is Willard Page, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Central Group in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I, too, by the grace of God, have been sober today. I would like to start off, I'd like to tell you how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, or how AA came to me. This little story might not mean much to you, but it means a lot to me, and maybe it will to you a little later on in my story. I don't talk too much about my drinking escapades. I don't think it's necessary. When I told you I was an alcoholic, I think that qualifies me. I'm one of the so-called old-timers in this movement. 17 years. In the early days, we talked about 55 minutes about where we'd been drunk and all the jails we'd been in, and about 5 minutes about AA. I don't think that's necessary. I was living upstairs in an apartment, and we had oil heat. The tank was on the ground, and we had a lift to pull the oil out. One day this thing knocked off, this lift knocked off, and called a man to come repair it. And I was upstairs drunk. And a few days after that, and I don't know how many, it knocked off again. And they called this same man back, and I was upstairs a little drunker. And then again, a few days after that, and again I don't know how many, it knocked off again, and they called this same man back. And I was upstairs, and I was in terrible shape this time. And I was crawling, trying to get to the bathroom. And as I came out the bedroom into the living room, I didn't know there was anyone in the world but me. And I run up on this man, and the light scared me to death. I was already so nervous I couldn't hardly move. But I knew this man, and I'd had a few drinks with him. And he started talking to me about my drinking. And he asked if I had ever thought about doing anything about it. And I told him I thought I had tried everything. And he asked me if I'd ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him that I had. I remember when it started in Greensboro. I saw an article in the newspaper, and that's all I knew about it. He told me that he was a member, that there was a meeting that night, and if I would go, he would be glad to come by and get me. And I told him if I could possibly get my clothes on and shave, I would go. And when he came by, I was ready. And I had hope before I ever got to my first meeting. He told me that there was a man down in the car who had been sober a week. And I knew this man. And he'd been drunk 2 years, to my knowledge. And he'd been sober a week in AA. So I had hope before I ever got to my first meeting. The first speaker I ever heard was a colored doctor. And there's another man here in this room who was the first speaker he ever heard. And I don't know what that old man said, but I shook hands with everybody there. They only had one group, about 15 or 16 members. And they made me welcome, and I liked that part. That's the first time I'd been welcome any place in a long, long time. I stayed in our club room for the first 2 weeks, day and night. And I think it was necessary. I attended meetings. We had 3 a week at that time. And I attended all the meetings, and we had speakers just like I am. But I stayed sober, and anything I say is my own opinion. And it's not necessarily that of AA as a whole. I believe that sobriety in the beginning is a gift of God. And the length of that sobriety depends upon how sick we are. Some are sicker than others. after that time is up, we earn sobriety. And we earn it by practicing the principles of this program. And trying to live these 12 steps to the best of our ability. I attended meetings for a month or more. And I kept wondering, when are we going to do something? I read the steps and we had the speakers. And I kept wondering when something was going to happen. When are we going to do something? And one day it dawned on me that these people are doing something. When are you going to do something? And that's when I began to read these steps and tried to figure out what they meant in my life. Now, when I came to this program, I could not take a single one of these steps, not a one. I had been a bad, bad boy all the way through. I did everything you did and a lot of things that you did not do. I was so far away from anything spiritual that long past meant nothing to me. God, I was running from everything godly. I didn't know it at that time. I wanted no part of it. I found this out later in AA. I'd been in AA, first of all, I was an agnostic, not an atheist, because I don't believe there's any such thing as an atheist. And I'll prove that to you a little later, I hope. An agnostic, maybe. I found out when I got to this program that I could not live with alcohol and I could not live without it. Therefore, I had a living problem. Not a drinking problem, but a living problem. And they gave me these 12 steps so I could live. So I could live with me. And a little later, they gave me the 12 traditions so I could live with you. I'd like to go right down those steps, if I may, and talk about me, because I'm the only one I know anything about. And I didn't know very much about me when I came to this program. I am a firm believer that we take these steps just exactly as they're written, beginning with number one. Two does not mean one thing until we take one. Three means nothing until we take two. And right on down the line, or a part of it. I don't believe we ever take it in their entirety. I believe this first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives would become unmanageable. I had to take that by myself, and I believe you have to take it by yourself. I can't help you. God can't help you. Nobody can help you. You do that by yourself. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. After that, I believe I have to have your help and the help of God in order to work these other steps. Step number one was easy. Once I decided I wanted to stop drinking. When I first came in, I didn't know what I wanted. A little story I heard a man tell down in Mississippi about a little boy cursed all the time. And his dad told him, son, we're having company for dinner tonight, and I don't want you using any profanity. He said, yes, Paul. And he sat down to the meal at night, and he said, son, what will you have? And he says, pass me those damn potatoes. And his daddy picked him up and took him in the back room and wore him out good. Comes sitting back down at the table and says, now what will you have, son? He says, well, Paul, I don't rightly know, but the one thing for sure, I don't know more of those damn potatoes. That's the way I was. I didn't know what I wanted, but I didn't want no more of that alcohol. Then I'd been in AA a short while, 30 days or so, I don't know, and I got drunk, a one-day deal. And I turned an automobile over. It was a new car, and we sold it for junk. And I came out of it with a little hole in my head, 3 stitches right along here. And I think that then is when I really came to believe in a power that was greater than I am. And today I choose to call that power God. Now, it didn't take right then, but I believe that's when I came to believe. Now, two or three little things happened as a result of that accident that meant a lot to me. I was charged with driving 100 miles an hour, driving drunk, not heeding the siren, illegal possession of whiskey, carrying a concealed weapon, and resisting arrest. Now, that's a pretty good charge. I carried me over to High Point Hospital and sewed my head up and carried me to jail. And this is a little bit of the insanity part, I guess. I demanded a doctor after we got over to jail, and the doctor just sent me over there. A man whom I had only known since I'd been in AA came over and went my bond, which was $1,000. I went to a meeting the next night, and another man who I did not like, and I made it known I didn't like him. He's bald-headed, and I had made the statement just a little before that if all the people in AA are like that old bald-headed guy over there, I don't want no part of this thing. Only I didn't say guy. That man was Gordon Latham. He doesn't care if I break his anonymity. He's been sober 20 years. And I didn't like him because he shook his finger right under my nose and he told me the truth, and I didn't want to hear it. He turned out to be the best friend I ever had. Still is. And it turned out he went to school with this judge, and he called him on his phone. He went to his office. And he told him about one of the boys in trouble over there, and he told him who it was, and he said, yeah, looks like he's in a lot of trouble to me. And he told him we needed a lawyer and asked him to recommend one. And he told him I had several good lawyers over there. And to make the story short, he talked about school and then about me and the lawyers, and finally got him to say if he was in trouble, who he would get. And then he thanked him and called the lawyer and told him that the judge had recommended him. And I got out of that mess for $13.25. Illegal possession of whiskey. They had it. We couldn't beat that charge. Now, the point I'm getting at is I had never known people like this before in my life. And I said, what kind of people are these that I am messed up with now? What are they looking for? I grew up a cheap gambler, all that stuff, and any time I did something, somebody was trying to get in his pocketbook. And I figured they were. And you know, they wanted me to get sober, that's all. That's all they asked of me. And I liked that. And I stayed sober on group therapy and fellowship, and with the grace of God, until I began to study these steps and to try to apply them. Then step number 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. And boy, I certainly didn't understand Him. But I liked that. Give me a choice. I was at the point that I despised preachers. For this reason, many of them talk to me, And not once did one ever tell me, why don't you come down Sunday school Sunday? You might enjoy being with the boys. They talked about alcohol as a sin, and I was going to hell, and I knew more about hell than he'd ever know, and I resented this. I wanted no part of him. Now our young ministers coming out of the seminaries know better. They know about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they call on us. And I'm glad. I think that's good. So I like this God as I understand him. I didn't understand him, but I like the choice that they gave me. And I did nothing about the first part of that step at all. Then the fourth step, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I made that. And I didn't like what I found. I was beginning to get honest with me when I got that far along. And I found that in this inventory that I was a liar, I was a cheat, I was jealous, I was envious, I was everything that I should not be. And I knew this all along, but this is the first time that I had ever brought it out in the opening. And the book tells us to write it down. And if we write it, it's hard to skip over it if it's in black and white. We're the best salesmen in the world. We can sell ourselves a bill of goods anytime we want to. And if we don't write it down, it's easy to skip over. Oh, this is not bad. I'll just let this go. In this inventory, I found out that I just about run my rope. I could go no further. I had to come up. I just about stripped the gears of my conscience. And when you do that, you're down. Because I believe we have to live with the dictates of our conscience. As I said, I just about tripped the gears. You know, in business, when we take an inventory, we have an item, a slow-moving item, something that's not moving. We try to replace it with something that will move. And same way in life, I believe. We remove hate. We take hate off the shelf and we replace it with love. And I knew nothing about love. I thought love was sex. I really did. Love for my fellow man, I didn't know what it meant. I had no use for you. Whether you lived or died, it meant nothing to me. Evidently, I didn't like me, or I wouldn't abuse me like I did. In this moral inventory, we have different morals. Each one of us. Not the way society sees it, but the way we see it. And again, I think the dictates of our conscience. I never did anything wrong in my life that I didn't know it was wrong before I did it. And I don't believe you did either. And that's a broad statement. I never did anything wrong in my life unless I knew it was wrong before I did it. And I repeat, I don't believe you did either. So I worked on this. Then step number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our own. That step was the easiest of them all for me, because I had come down the line like I told you I believe you have to do. I found out the exact nature of my wrongs in step number four. And I knew what to do about it. And I am taking part of that step right now. I'm admitting to you the exact nature of my wrongs. And I already have admitted them to God and to myself when I took that inventory. It's just that simple as far as I'm concerned. And Frick humbly, excuse me, asked him to remove these defects of character that I had. And I was full of them. And I'm still full of them. And every time I get one removed, I'm in the process of getting them removed, another one pops up. So I have to work on that step continuously. And I believe you will too if you stay sober. Every time we remove one, another one comes up. And it's a lifetime proposition with us. And then I'm going to ask him to remove our shortcomings. I still have plenty of them. I put off until tomorrow what I should do today. I do that a lot. A lot of them, the things I should do, if it's absolutely necessary, I'll get around to it. But I can put that one off. I'm lax on that one. I have many shortcomings. I know it, and I'm glad of it. That's a foolish statement, isn't it? I'm glad of it. You know why I'm glad? Because I love this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can work right there the rest of my life and never complete. And I hope the day that I die, I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, working on these steps. And the amend steps. I've heard them discussed many, many times. You know, at first I thought it was these guys that I used to fight with and all of that stuff and these beer joints that I should make amends to, but as far as I'm concerned, they're out. I never see them anymore. And I'll just go for it. Well, I hope I never see them again. They never did much for me. God never did anything to me, but a lot of people did. They did, but they don't bother me anymore. They did for a while, and I came up with this, and it satisfied me, and it might help you. I came up with five people. My mother, my sister, my wife, my daughter, and the one that heads the list. Me. When I became willing to make amends to me for the things that I had done to me, then life began to be a little easier for me. I made amends to my mother, and my sister, my wife, and my daughter, mother and sister, by staying sober. Old maid sister, she's the one who used to get me out of jail all the time. And I got there plenty of times. I got in jail 13 times when I was 18 years old as a result of alcohol. Fighting, gambling, you name it, and I did it. And as I said, I grew up in the Depression days. My daddy was a liquor-drinking brick mason. There was five of us children, and we had nothing to begin with. So I had to fight for everything I got from the very beginning. And I started with the boys where the money was. That was the bootleggers, the liquor men, and the cheap gamblers. They had the money. And I did this for years. And I did it because I wanted to. My people didn't teach me to do that. I taught myself. I liked it. This alcoholism was my own choice. Maybe not alcoholism, but alcohol. And as a result of alcohol, I had alcoholism. And then as a result of alcoholism, I had the living problem that I'm talking about. And then when to do so would injure them or others. That takes in a big field and a lot of things, the others, that I just don't care to discuss up here. I don't think this is the place to discuss them because involve other people, and there's no point in it. And I like to look at that others, that's me, boy, would injure them or others. And you know, since I've been in this program, I love you, and I'm beginning to like me pretty good. And I don't want to get hurt, so I'll just go right there with that one. And this next step, while they're all important, but this one means much. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. No, I go wrong every day of my life, some way or another. And I have to get rid of it just as quick as I possibly can, and I know it. See, I got drunk 4, 5, 6, I don't even know, times in the beginning of AA because I did everything you told me not to do. And I got drunk. I heard it said in the beginning that after and it appeared of sobriety, about 90% of the time where there's a slip, there's a slip. And I believe that. That's not what somebody told me. I know. And this cheating business, boy, that means all the way. You stop it all the way. If you cheat at one thing, you'll cheat at another. And you better believe it. Then this next one. This is the one that, as far as I was concerned, it was for you. I made a statement one time that a man or woman would get down on their knees and pray to something they could neither see, hear, feel, or smell was stupid. And I had to eat those words, and I did. And you know, I told you that I was a pretty rough boy, that I did everything that I shouldn't do. I broke all man's laws and all of God's laws, with the exception of one. And that one was murder. If I did that, I didn't get caught. And I've been blacked out many times for long periods of time. You know, I was in the Marines during the war, and on a little island of Aishima, and it was a forward area at that time, and we had no night fighter planes or any protection of any kind, and one jet plane got in on us one night and dropped a string of 3 bombs, and one hit near me. And I was asleep. I didn't get hurt. In the monsoon season, been raining for about 14 days, and it blew a crater almost as large as this room. Not as deep, but as wide. And I woke up, felt like my heart was pushing me up. I was trying to scratch in. And I was praying. And this is the point I'm getting at. I don't care what you have done in your life, how bad you've been, how rough the going is, that when the going gets too rough, we know where to go. I did. Things were out of control. I couldn't handle the situation. I was scared. And I woke up praying. And I never said another prayer until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I said it then because the going was rough. And then when I got here, the going was rough again. And I listened to these people who were staying sober, and I watched them. And in all their talk, I talked about spirituality, spiritual things, and I tried to confuse it with organized religion in the beginning, and it didn't work for me. But I picked out this old bald-headed man that I was telling you about in the beginning that I didn't like, and I watched him. He was staying sober. He called himself a pickle drunk. He'd been pickled for 17 years, he said, and been sober for 2 years at that time. And I watched him because I knew he was going to get drunk, and he didn't do it. And he talked about prayer and things spiritual. And I have always wanted to be a winner. And I followed the winners. I watched the winners. Loser, I played poker, a cheap gambler, as I said. And I've heard people say that, oh, I like a little sociable game of cards. If I lose a few dollars, that's all right. They're the boys I look for all the time because I like them. Only one way I know to play, and that's in this old life of ours too, and that's to win. I don't like losers. These guys that like to play poker and don't care if they lose, I look for them, boy. They leave it with you most of the time. Same way in life. Get with a winner. Losers, they don't have anything to offer me at all. So I watched these people. Every single one of them talked about spiritual things. And I didn't know what they were talking about. Then I decided I would join them. I would try this thing. I'm staying sober. Or I'm dry, let's put it that way. Then, you know, first thing I prayed for was material things for me, new automobiles, things like that. And they didn't come. Then, since I've been in AA, I feel this way. And as I said in the beginning, anything I say is my own opinion. I feel like when I pray to God that He gives me all the spiritual food that I need. All that I need. If I will only ask for it. Out of this spiritual food, I get serenity. Peace of mind. Happiness. These material things, I still believe that the greenback dollar gets them. I might be wrong. That's my opinion. Like the old colored preacher said, that when I pray for a turkey, sometime I get one, sometime I don't. But every time I ask the good Lord to show me where that turkey is, I get one every time. And that's the way it is in AA, I believe. Or in life, AA is life. Every time I pray to God to show me how to get these things, I get them. I get spiritual food. He gives me that. He keeps me supplied with that as long as I am willing to accept it so that I can live with peace of mind and serenity and be happy. And the material things, when you pray for potatoes, you better grab a hoe. I believe that I can sit over here in this chair and pray for something to happen, food to come to me, and I don't know how long it takes to starve to death, but that's how long I last, just sitting over there in that chair. This is a program of action. I've got to do something about it. Step number 12. Wait, let me go a little further in this other one. And I said, I didn't like you in the beginning. And I didn't like me. And then I prayed for these material things, and it didn't come. And then I heard a little later in AA that I better be careful what I prayed for because prayers were answered. Well, I like that one too. Then, as I began to grow in the program, I began to pray for another drunk, that he might get sober and affiliate himself with Alcoholics Anonymous and get some of the things that I was getting out of life. And I began to see these people show up in the meetings. Well, I'm not plumb stupid, I don't think. I hope not. I like to believe that it was the result of my prayers and yours. Not mine alone, but mine and yours. There's one sitting out here now that I have prayed for. Sober. Happy. I didn't do it alone, but I got self-satisfaction right here as a result of this. I said I'd never seen God, and I never heard him, but I felt him born many times right here. Anytime I do something good and decent, I know it. And I feel it here. And step number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Right down the line, these, not one, not five, seven, these steps. I know very few people who had a spiritual awakening and then came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Very few. Most people have a spiritual awakening and go to the church of their choice. I kept wondering, when am I going to have a spiritual awakening? And I talked about it as we studied the steps. And this same old bald-headed man told me one night to stop worrying about it, you've had it. And I said, what do you mean I've had it? He says, well, you just don't live the kind of life you're living and do the things you're doing and help other people like you are unless you've had a spiritual awakening. Well, I liked that. And I latched on to it, and I'm still holding on to that part right there. And if you've had a problem along the line with that, that might work for you. And practice these principles in all of our affairs. All. Right back to this cheating. Got to turn it all loose. Get rid of every bit of it. You know what it is, and I know what it is. And if we hold it, if we keep it in us, we are going to get drunk, or we're going to be worse than drunk. I'd rather see somebody drunk than on one of these long dry drunks, I believe. They're too hard to get along with. You know, that lift I was telling you about, that oil lift, I didn't know this. I didn't see this in the beginning. I lived in that house for 6 more years. And it operated for 7 more. And it never knocked off again. Now, I've heard all my life that God works in mysterious ways. And I believe today that that was his way of getting to me. I don't believe it could ever reach me any other way. I don't know whether that means anything to you or not, but it means everything to me. And it took me a long time to see it. I didn't see it the first few days I was in AA. Then I won a victory. And this is a simple little old thing. But we're talking about me tonight anyway, not you. One night, I was talked to the biggest gambler in this room and every field. And play very, very little poker now. Very, very little. I used to bet on football game, on sporting event, and I found out you couldn't win, so I started booking. And I made a little money. And I threw it away just as fast as I could get it. Then, I guess, a couple of years ago now, I don't know how long, cemetery, I was playing poker with a bunch of fellas, not AA, a little $2 limit poker game. And we used to call them, when I was active, ring-tail monkeys. That's the best kind. And I was $25, $30 loser. And that old devil jumped up on my shoulder and he said, "You gonna let these monkeys take your money?" I could cheat them to death, and I knew it. And I was tempted, boy, to get my money back and theirs. And I fought that thing, and I fought it, and I didn't do anything. I played them just like they were dealt. And I lost $15 or $20. I don't remember now how much. But you know, I felt good when I went home that night. I won a victory. Possibly one of the biggest in my life. Because I didn't cheat when I wanted to. I think that's practicing the principles of this program. And one way, many ways it can be practiced. You know, this is a think program, and if I said anything that will make you think, make somebody think, I feel good about it. And if I haven't, I still feel good about it. Because this program is designed to help the one who's talking as much as the listener. And when I came here, I was full of poison, and I know it. And I feel like every time I get up before a group and talk, that a little bit of it comes out. And I got a lot of talking to do. I always feel better, not what I said to you, but what I said to me. And I said, this is a think program. Thinking people don't drink. And drinking people don't think. That's all it is. This program works. If you don't believe it, try it. And it won't work without the help of God. And if you don't believe He'll help you, ask Him. Thank you.